לבוב סיסמה תנועות ידיים מוגזם מות השראה
Senator Sanders joins me now from Cedar Rapids, Iowa. Senator, welcome back to Meet the Press, sir. Let me start with the importance of winning for your candidacy. Is there a path to the nomination without you up to here in Iowa first?
Well, Chuck, let me just say this. As you well know, when we began this campaign, we were at 3% in the polls. We were 50 points behind Hillary Clinton. Today, as you've indicated, we're neck and neck. I think we have a real shot to win this if there is a large voter turnout. And it's not just young people. It is working class people. It is middle class people who are sick and tired of status quo politics. That's true in Iowa. It's true in New Hampshire. It's true all over the country. So to answer your question, yeah, I think we really do.
Officially, we're having the yeshiva started like a mitzvah Shabbos day that started this week. So officially we're having Malka in here. What time does it usually finish the...
Well, it starts with 10:30, Malka, right?
So
I'll be finished before then.
Oh, you'll be finished before then.
Yeah, it won't be a problem.
Okay, good. Thank you.
Okay, I was scared I would have a lot of new people, and Baruch Hashem, I don't. It's actually my preference. I want to emphasize that this is not a special new shir that was created because of the new thing they're doing that's been going on for almost 5 years. And those who come, those who don't, and it's not like a new type of shir. And the reason I say that is, number one, we are towards the end of the book of Mishlei, not towards the beginning. And number two, because it is a textual shir, it's not like, you get a real exciting Musar Shmuz every week. It depends on the flow of the text. And I know that people have a tendency, they don't like the first half an hour of the shir, so, they don't come back again. I'm not looking for that audience, actually. So that's why I actually don't like the shir to even be advertised. Maybe there's a little exit. It's an extrinsicity of me, but that's the way it is. Because this is a shir that, if you want to come, I hope you'll come for the long run, not for the, it wasn't exciting this week, so forget it. Anyway. So we are in Perek Chaf Dalet. Perek Chafei. And again, you'll recall that the book of Mishlei has three separate books. And this last book was added later. It's very, very clear if you look at Perek Chafei, Pasuk Aleph. It actually begins, Gam Eila, these two are the Mishle Shlomo, are the Proverbs of Shlomo, Asher Hatiku Anshe Chizkiya Melech Yehuda, that was copied by the men or the assembly of Chizkiya, the king of Judah. Now again, you have to remember, Chizkiyo HaMelech was a great, great, great grandson of Shlomo HaMelech. This was 100 years after Shlomo HaMelech. So the pasuk is actually telling me that after the rest of the book of Mishle had been completed, in the time of Chizkiyahu, they found additional proverbs. And indeed, Shlomo HaMelech had many, many proverbs, and some of them were Ruach HaKodesh, some were not, and they actually decided to add these proverbs to the book. Right? So this is an addendum, this is an appendix that was added to the book of Mishle really over a century after the core of the book was made. So that's an important point. We sometimes think that any thesis that posits that biblical books were added to is apikorsis or kfira. Well, of course, in some cases that would be true, but here we have an explicit example of something that was added to this sefer more than 100 years after the death of the author. But these are still considered to be the Mishle Shlomo. So in particular, we're now looking at Pasuk Yud Zayin. And Pasuk Yud Zayin says, actually, let's look at Tesayin and Yud Zayin. Look at them together. Devash Matsasa Echol Dayaka. If you find honey, eat enough to be satisfied, but don't overstuff yourself on honey, because what will happen? Pen Tispa Enu, lest you become overstuffed. Fahakeso, and you will vomit it. You will regurgitate it. So don't overeat on the honey, or whatever it is. This is a good advanced message for the Mlava Malka tonight. And then the next pasuk goes with contrast. Hokar raglecha mi beis reyecha, pen yispaecha usneyecha. Restrain your feet from going to your friend too much, lest he become overstuffed with you, and he will hate you. So the simple pshat, this is not how the Vilna Gaon is going to learn, but the simple pshat is that these two psukim are starting with an analogy from a simple situation and moving to a social situation. Meaning the same way honey is sweet and honey is good and I love it and it tastes great, but too much of a good thing can make you sick. So too, even with hospitality and friendship. In other words, it's by way of contrast. Yes, let's say your friend loves to have you over, loves to interact with you, but there is a point at which a person has to realize that perhaps they're crossing the boundary. So for example, if you have, again, lefi pshuto, it's a very, very simple level. Let's say you have a married couple that you're very friendly with. Right? So you come over all the time, and they have you over for Shabbos, etc. But you like to start coming over during the week and at night and during the day, etc. There is a point at which a guest has a certain responsibility not to excessively make demands on the host, because the host himself might become a little tired of it. In fact, this is reflected in the very interesting halacha. You know, one of the categories of Lashon Hara, which is not a Doraisa Lashon Hara, but it's called Avak, dust of Lashon Hara, which is prohibited rabbinically, is something like when you start talking about how hospitable somebody is. They say, oh, you really got to check out, you know, Yeruchim. He has so much food for Shabbos, etc. Now, that is potentially Lashon Hara. Because that means there may be 100 people who go to Yeruchim and it may overwhelm him and bankrupt him and use up all of his time, etc. Now, if the host tells you, please tell people that I love to have guests, that's a separate thing. You were given reshus. But if the Stamazai talk about a person's great hospitality, Chazal actually say, is avak lashon hara. So, in fact, there's a secular saying. It says, fish and guests stink after 3 days. You may have heard that. Meaning, you know, okay. Now, according to that, what Shlomo HaMelech is doing in verse Tesayin and Yudzayin is, this is literally how a mashal works. You take something that is simple and well-known, and you apply it to something new. The case of overeating is a very familiar phenomenon, and therefore it's taking the Devash case and it's using it to illustrate about not taking advantage of your friends, not using your friends too much, not using them excessively. In fact, in that sense, I would point out that when Pirkei Avos talks about friendship, so what does it say? It says, "Asei lecha rav," make for yourself a teacher, you know, someone that guides you. And then it says, "Kenei lecha chaver." Now, literally, "kenei" means buy a friend. B-U-Y, buy a friend. Why does it say buy a friend? Buy a friend implies you're paying something for being a friend. Why does it say buy yourself a friend? So the truth of the matter is, because you have to understand that friendship has a cost, meaning friendship is not simply to have somebody that's there for you, but you have to be willing to invest, not so much money, but you have to invest your time and your energy to be there for them. And if you simply look at friends as people that you take things from, then after a while, you know, you're going to be resentful, and they're going to be resentful, you're going to be resented, and the friendship is not going to be strong. In fact, it's interesting, there's a fellow, he didn't give his name, this is a fascinating book. This is a book, it's called In Their Homes. You might want to get it, it's so fascinating. This is about Ben Torah, I guess probably now maybe he's 35 or 40. But he managed over the past 20 years to become like friendly with all of the Gedolei Hador, like, you know, Rav Chaim Kineski, like he's just a friend, he just can show up and, you know, schmooze with them, etc. Now, his picture appears around 100 times, 100 pictures of his face, and his first name is Binyamin. But he said, because of modesty, he didn't want to give his last name. So, I don't know his last name, but his name is Binyamin. And it's just amazing, like the Gedolim that he gets to know on a personal level. You know, most of us, we go to Rav Chaim, we're lucky, you know, we'll get 30 seconds. If you're really a tzaddik, you'll get 40 seconds, you know. but here, like shows up just for supper, you know, schmoozes and this and that. But he said, people always ask him. First of all, he makes two points. He makes a point that he never took up a Seder to go to a Gadol. It was always Chutzla Seder. He says, he doesn't that, like he doesn't spend like his morning Seder, you know, visiting Gedolim. But the second point he made was that part of how he got so friendly is he always thought, what could he do for them? Because they needed various things. And no one ever thinks, like, what can I do for a five? Can I get you something? Or whatever it would be. And he says he worked very hard to talk to family members and the like as to whatever the Gadol could use. Maybe it's a special pen or a notebook, whatever it would be. And he made a point of not just being there to take from them, but being there to give to them. That, you know, they also had needs in various ways. And he said that is the way that he was able to establish a friendship. And that is mamish, the meaning of kenei lecha chaver, that you buy friends by investing your own efforts in being a friend. You can't expect people to listen to your problems if you're not willing to listen to their problems, right? Sometimes you may have a real tzaddik as a friend who's willing to do that. But generally speaking, you know, friendship has to be a mutual thing. You have to give as well as take. Same thing in a marriage. Same thing. So the simple meaning is, therefore, that Shlomo HaMelech is warning us not to take friendships and hospitality for granted, and not to abuse the privileges that one is given, because eventually that can turn into hate and resentment, and you've lost a very precious thing that you've had. Okay. Now, seen in that explanation, Tes Zion and Yud Zion are one teaching, meaning the Devash is not a separate teaching. It is simply the Hakdama to the second teaching. In other words, it's the setup. But the Vilna Gaon in his Perish learns very differently. The Vilna Gaon learns that Tes Zion and Yud Zion are two different teachings. In other words, they're not connected. And the first he talks about is the following. And this is a very, very interesting point, and it's interesting that the Gra uses this idea many times in the Sefer. So according to the Gra, this is repeated many times in Mishlei. And that is, Devash refers to the sweetness of Torah. And in particular, it refers to the inner dimension of Torah that we might call mysticism or Kabbalah. And he says, a person has to be very, very careful not to try to jump up to a spiritual level that they're not yet ready for. Because even though objectively Torah is sweet, Torah is good, but if you open yourself up to the aspects of Torah that you're not yet ready for, it'll make you sick. And regurgitation is a very good analogy, because when you regurgitate, which is a polite way for saying vomit, you don't only vomit up the extra stuff you took in, you vomit up all the stuff you already had. So what's going to happen is that you're going to lose even the Torah that you have. In other words, it's not simply the new stuff is not going to stay within me. I'm going to lose the madrigos that I have, right? That's the idea. And therefore, one has to be very, very careful. On one hand, we always have to move up. But we move up in a graduated, gradual way. Because it's very, very important that one try to internalize madrigos. You know, I think about this, this Gemara in Chulin, a very interesting Gemara in Chulin. The Gemara in Chulin, in the 8th Perek, which talks about the laws of meat and milk. So it mentions that a certain Amira said, I am like vinegar to my father's wine. My father was wine, and I'm vinegar. Because when my father ate fleishiks, he would not have milchiks for 24 hours. And I don't wait that long. I wait 6 hours. Actually, it depends on machlok Israel. You know, the way we paskin lahalacha, he would wait 6 hours, but there are other views in the Gemara. But he says his father waited 24 hours. And I don't do that, so my father was much more righteous than me. So the Mefarshim ask a very simple question. If he held that it was good to wait 24 hours, then let him wait 24 hours. I mean, is he actually telling us that he had such a desire for ice cream that I just can't wait? Ben and Jerry's, or whatever it would be. I mean, he's an Amora. So if he thought it was admirable to wait 24 hours, he would have waited 24 hours. The explanation that's given is the following. His father waited 24 hours because his father had such a yira that chas v'shalom, there may be a particle of meat in his mouth, you know, even you know, 10 hours later, that he just couldn't take the milk because maybe he would have meat. Now, his son is saying, I don't have that hero. Yeah, I could wait 24 hours. I could do it. But it wouldn't be an expression of a madrega that I reached. It would be artificial. It would be fake. I could do the behavior. But the behavior does not represent the spiritual madrega that I've reached. That's an important lesson. You think about taking a chumrah on, taking an extra thing. The question is, are we there yet, right? Like the kids say at a trip, are we there yet? Are we there yet? Is that our madrega? Is that our level? You know, there's a lot that we can work on that you know, within the framework of halacha. So, for example, I remember, you know, when, you know, around a number of years ago when, unfortunately, tragically, there were so many terrorist incidents in Eretz Yisrael, you know, bus bombings and everything else, and Baruch Hashem should continue to protect us from it. So I was in America then. So the different shuls were thinking about we should say extra Tehillim. So you know, being sarcastic in my, I didn't say it, but I was thinking to mine, oh yeah, that's right. That's exactly what Hashem needs. Hashem needs some more prayers that we say without Kavanah. By the way it is now, we daven 3 times a day, so let's do more. But what's that doing? You know, you could take what we already say and think about it some more. Aleinu Asher Yatzar, the bracha you make on a glass of water. Rabbi Avigdor Miller, Zichrono Livracha, has a whole essay on what you think about when you eat an apple. Just a really beautiful essay about the color and the texture and the mix of acidity and sweetness and how you become grateful to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Right, a lot of Rav Miller's, Miller's been taught for 75 years, but a lot of his hadracha was the notion of hakaras hatov, looking at the physical world. He talks about peanuts and oranges. I mean, he has a whole marachos on seeing the gratitude of how Hashem made everything, not only beautiful but intricate and complex and the like. So the truth of the matter is, avodah doesn't always involve jumping up to higher madrigas. Sometimes it's taking what you're already doing and doing it in a deeper, more thoughtful way. So the Gra says, in fact, that's why the Gra said earlier, you'll recall, that a person should not always seek to go to the highest shir and the deepest Rebbe, even though it may be a point of pride to be promoted. People want to go to the higher shir. So sometimes you learn more from the lower shir. Now, that's a difficult balance. Sometimes people stay in a lower shir because they don't want to be challenged. That's a chisaron in the other way. But sometimes this kind of, you know, a person has, and again, I'm not saying it's an evil guy, but it's a normal pride. You know, I want to progress. You know, I started in Mechina or Shoris, as it used to be called, and, you know, now I'm in the center, and after I get out of the center, I got to move to the base measures, etc. And all of that is good. A person progresses. But sometimes you have to know that it's good to stay where you are to be sure that, you know, you'll learn the most that you can learn. The issue is not, you know, what shir you're in. The issue is, where am I learning the best? Right? So the Gra says that is the meaning of not overeating even in your Torah. So the Tefash is your Torah, that not to go to a madrega that you're not ready for. Now, these are going to be difficult questions. How do you know when you're ready? To give an example that's not tremendously significant, but it's a relevant example in Or Sameach. You know, the dress of the yeshiva boy, right, is to wear a black hat, right? So when do you wear a black hat? You know, some rabbeim will actually tell a student not to wear a hat. Says, you know, you're not ready for it yet, as it were, because the chitzonios, the external, is not yet matched up with the panemius. Right, so these are, that's a relatively minor issue, but it comes up a lot in what do I learn, what chumras do I adopt, etc. By the way, let me give you another klal about chumras, which is maybe more relevant when you get married. In the abstract, we could say that, you know, be machmer is a good thing. You know, you have Yirat Shamayim, you want to be more meticulous in halacha, that's normally a good thing in the abstract. But the key here is this. If your going beyond the din is going to cause you to compromise things that you're chayev to do, then that's a chumrah that you shouldn't be moving towards. So for example, if a given chumrah is going to make you anxious, short-tempered, not relating to your wife, let's say, in as good a way as you should, then almost by definition it's not the right derech, because you're trying to be machmer in this area, which is, let's say, optional, beyond the halacha, and what you're doing is you're destroying things that are mamish, chiyuvim, gemurim. Right? So one has to be very, very careful that in the desire to serve Hashem by strengthening yourself in one direction, you don't pull yourself away from things that are actually much more important. Right? That's why it's a very, very important thing. Reb Dessler, to give you again a small example, Reb Dessler used to trim his beard as long as his wife was alive. But after his wife was nifteris, he did not trim his beard. And he said that, al pi Kabbalah, you're not supposed to trim your beard. According to the halacha, you can, as long as you don't cut the corners of the beard with etc. But he said, al pi Kabbalah, the Arizal says, you're not supposed to touch your beard at all. And he said he very much wants to follow the practice of the Arizal. But when his wife was alive, she preferred it the other way, so he never brought it up. So he trimmed his beard because it made her happy. When she was no longer around, then he, you know, was machmer. That's a very interesting example, because many people will say the chumrah of the Arizal is such an important thing. No, it is an important thing. But he said the shalom bayis is a more important thing than the chumrah of the Arizal. Right? So these are things to think about in chumras. Okay. Now, so that's the first pasuk. So the first pasuk is not connected to the next pasuk. Now, what is the next pasuk? Keep your feet away from the house of your friend, lest he become satisfied with you and he will hate you. So the Vilna Gaon says this is a new pshat, this is not referring to hospitality. But rather, here he says a very odd thing. He says, Beis Re'echa, the house of your friends. The word Re'ya is a very interesting word, because Re'ya means friend, and Ra also means bad. So he wants to say, Re'echa here means your bad friend, and that refers to the Yetzer Hara. And the Pasuk is saying, keep your distance from the Yetzer Hara. Now, what does that mean? I mean, in a way, although that's very hard, but in a way that's pretty obvious, of course. He says, no, he says an interesting thing. He says, his lashon is, Hayetzer hara nitzrach miyod liavodas Hashem. The Yetzer hara is very necessary to serve God properly. You can't really serve Hashem if you don't have a Yetzer hara. Now, he doesn't explain why that is so, but he says, we'll try to talk about why. You need your Yetzer hara to serve God. In what way is that so? Well, a few ways. A person has to, for example, have desires to eat, because that will alert him to eat. Otherwise, he's not going to eat. Otherwise, he's going to die. So in many, many ways, we need these physical desires. We cannot ignore them. They tell us what we need to do. Other ways, it says the following. The Zohar says, very fascinating Zohar, the Zohar says, the Yetzer Tov in a person is a very passive and placid type of attitude in which you just look at the world and you say, Hashem will take care of everything. All initiative and creativity come from the Yetzer Hara. The sense of ego within man that I want to create, I want to produce, I want to do something of enduring significance. So if we live in a world where Hashem gave an achrayas to mankind to conquer disease, to drain the swamps, to build cities, and on the spiritual level to build yeshivos, be marbitz Torah, and be machadesh in Torah, you need, in a sense, a certain propelling ego of the Yetzer Hara. Because the Yetzer Tov just surrenders to God and becomes butthole to HaKadosh Baruch. And that is what the Gemara in Saita means when it says a Talmud Chacham has to have Shmini Shebishminis. That means an eighth of an eighth of Gaiva. It's a very small measure. But there needs to be a certain amount of gaiva within a person. Otherwise, a person will never assert the leadership that they have to assert. Even in raising children, you need that Yetzer Hara. Like, you know, your children are misbehaving. You're the father. You're supposed to be madrich them. But you say to yourself, who am I? I'm a nobody. I'm a nothing. Who am I to give musr? That might be a feeling of a genuinely modest person. What am I? Who am I? But the answer is, you gotta rise to the occasion, right? Same thing with the Rebbe. I remember when I was in ninth grade, and you know, I came as most of my classmates from we came from day school backgrounds. We had gone to modern day schools, even co-ed day schools and the like. But the concept of standing up for a Rebbe was something totally foreign. We never had to say standing up for a Rebbe. So the Rebbe comes in the first day, ninth grade. You know, nobody stands up. So he actually had to give. He says, this is very uncomfortable for me. He says, I don't like to do this, but I have to talk to you about standing up for a Rebbe and this and that. And he said, it's not a matter of his kavod, it was a matter of the kavod of the Torah, etc. So the truth of the matter is, the Vilna Gaon is saying something very, very profound. That a person needs to use the Yetzer Hara, which is egotistical and even prideful, as that which propels a person to do good things in the world. Because the pure Yetzer Tov is passive, and the pure Yetzer Tov is batel and nullified to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. So we need the Yetzer Hara to alert us to our physical needs. And we need the Yetzer Hara to give us the energy to go ahead and do things in the world, whether it's science, technology, or more importantly, in the world of Ruchnius and the like. So the Vilna Gaon says, the Yetzer Hara in some ways is our friend. We enlist him in our Avodas Hashem. But he's a very, very dangerous friend. Because when you get too friendly, as it were, you can be pulled in very, very destructive ways. So the Vilna Gaon is saying, that's exactly it. He says, yeah, visit your Yetzer Hara sometimes. meaning use him, but don't be there too much, because if he gets his fill of you, he will eventually destroy you. And therefore, the concept basically is, you need the Yetzer Hara. Now, that's why it's a very dangerous thing, you see. It's always the case that any bad things that I can totally avoid are actually easier to deal with. That's why they say food addictions. Again, I mean, I'm using it. People talk about food addictions. That's not clear that it's truly an addiction in that way. But food addictions are the hardest addictions to control, even harder than drugs and alcohol, because, no pun intended, you cannot go cold turkey on a food addiction. Meaning alcohol, eventually a person could just get away from, and drugs, but something that you have to constantly be connected to, that's a very, very, that's a very, very difficult addiction, because you can't just cut it away. So the same thing, you need your Yetzer Hara, but you have to have a way of not getting too involved with it, because then it will pull you away. So that's the significance of Pasuk Yud Zayin, and that is called Reyacha, and that is the double entendre of Reyacha, your friend and your Ra, your source of bad, right? The same word has those two connotations, and the like.
Why does it say that he would hate you?
Yes, he will hate you because...
Because of your failure to overly embrace him?
Well, the other way around, the way the Gra interprets the Hemshech is that he will eventually entice you and offer you all sorts of things that look pleasant. And when you surrender, he will then turn in Shamayim and be your greatest enemy. Because it's brought that the Yetzer Hara, after he's machshil you, is the Satan that is makatreg in Shamayim. Meaning, he's the one that'll be telling God how bad you are. So that's the idea, that he will initially, in fact, that's Yisbacha, he will get the satisfaction of your sinning, and then he will become your enemy. So he entices you by offering you pleasure and comfort and ease and respect, and then he'll turn out to be your greatest enemy.
The Yetzer Hara doesn't want you to resist and to overcome?
Well, that's an interesting question. I mean, again, according to the Gemara in Saita, the Yetzer Hara actually has a job in this world, which means the Yetzer Hara's job, he's a shaliach of Hashem to give you struggle and give you temptation. And in a sense, the Yetzer Hara would actually want you to win. But his job is to convince you to lose. That's his job. His job is, so therefore it actually makes sense. So when you lose, although that's what he was trying to get you to do, he will hate you, because in point of fact, his mission was that you should reject him. Right, so that's exactly why he will hate you. Because, in a sense, I mean, it's hard to describe the real want of the Yetzer Hara, because it's a spiritual force, but this is a spiritual force that was created to be overcome and to be rejected. And therefore, when you give in to him, he's not going to like you. When you give in to him, he's going to hate you. And this is what Chazal say. Chazal say, the Yetzer Hara is the Satan and is the Malach HaMavis, meaning three things. The Yetzer Hara makes you sin. The Yetzer Hara is then the accusing angel in Shamayim. And the Yetzer Hara is the Malach HaMavis that carries out the punishment. It's like those southern policemen, right? They say in these small towns in the south, you know, they give you the tickets, and then the policeman becomes the judge, and then he locks you up in the prison cell, right? So it's the same. It's exactly the same thing with the Malach HaMavis. Yeah.
Right. Yetzer Hara was able to trick like a lot of big people in the Torah. In that is, if it's fighting people like us, it isn't the fact that we're winning, isn't it? It's because it's allowing us to win. If it's able to trick Shlomo Melech, we should be like a piece of cake. And the fact that we're succeeding is because it's not giving us the proper dosage of.
We certainly don't succeed 100% of the time. We're very, very far from it. We succeed some of the time. Shlomo HaMelech also succeeded most of the time. I mean, the point was that there is an idea in Chazal that the greater a person is, the stronger the Yetzer Hara focuses on him. So that's why great people will sometimes have a very powerful Yetzer Hara, but it won't be for the same things. Now, we don't mean to say a great person is going to have a Yetzer Hara to desecrate Shabbos, but whatever it will be, there will be a big, powerful Yetzer Hara. People who are, what do they say? They say small people make small mistakes. Great people can sometimes make very, very great, great mistakes. You know, so I mentioned the story before about the idea of the Yetzer Hara. The Yetzer Hara likes to attack people who are the choicest fruit, the greatest people. I mentioned the story about a person, a chush of a person, who was a businessman. He had a store. And every second there were not customers, he would learn. He would have a safer, he would be learning all the time. And he had a lot of customers, and he almost was annoyed when people came in. Like, you know, why are you bothering me, you know? But he had many, he was very matzliach, he was very wealthy. And then he died. So his son had the attitude, hey, you know, my father didn't even care about this business. And yet he was so successful, I'm really going to invest time and effort to build up my customers, and kal v'chomer, I'll be great. And what happened was, nobody came anymore, and, you know, the business went bankrupt. So after Mayav Yisrael Roshana, like, he asked HaKadosh Baruch Hu, he says, how come my father didn't care about the business, and he was so successful, and I really invested hard, and, you know, I had no success? So Hashem answered the following. He says, the Yetzer Hara wanted to take your father away from learning. Your father was learning. So the Yetzer Hara has to find some way to get him away. So he sends him customers. He says, you're not learning anyway. So what do I need? The Yetzer Hara doesn't have to do anything. So Memela, you know, there was no need for you to get customers because you were not taking advantage one way or the other.
Okay, yeah. But the thing is, isn't the Yetzer Hara going to be accountable for not doing its best with people if it's a... It has a hiyuv to do the will of Hashem, which is to bring down the person. And if it doesn't do it, isn't it going to be accountable for not doing its job properly?
No. First of all, I mean, the idea that the Yetzer Hara somehow has bechira, that I think would be a very difficult notion. The Yetzer Hara is a force within a person that drives a person in different directions. But the point is, the strength of that drive will depend from person to person. Some people may have a tremendous drive towards Arayos, and some people towards Geneva, etc. So the Yetzer Hara will adapt itself based on the overall personality of the person. But to say Hashem is going to hold the Yetzer Hara accountable, I mean, the Yetzer Hara is not a Baal Bechira per se. It's really the kind of the negative of my soul, meaning there's a positive and a negative. This is the negative aspect of my animal soul.
The thing is, if Yetzer Hara was able to trick Dovid HaMelech, sorry to spend so much time on this, if it tricked Dovid HaMelech, right, and Dovid HaMelech was on a high madrega,
yeah,
then nowadays it could easily trick all of us in a heartbeat, because it has to just use a portion of the strength that it used on Dovid HaMelech. And
well,
once it does it, we're all gonna be defeated. And the fact that it doesn't do it, isn't it gonna be held accountable for not using the big weapons at its disposal to take us out?
Again, I'm just gonna repeat that to be held accountable presupposes that you have free will. The HR is not a separate entity that has free will. It is simply the darkness of my soul. Now, the greater my soul, the more powerful the darkness is going to be as well. The weaker my soul generally, the weaker the HR is going to be. So it really reflects me overall. But as I say, you know, so you can't really say, oh, the HR was so strong in David, so why doesn't it, you know, it's not a volitional, it's not an autonomous entity that has free will. Okay. Yeah.
So Vilna Gaon explains that verse by saying that the friend is the Yetzer Hara. We need to use the Yetzer Hara as to get us closer to Hashem, right?
Right.
But wasn't there a verse in Tehillim where King David says he eliminated his Yetzer Hara and eliminated his desire?
Yeah. There is such a verse. That's a very interesting point. The Baal HaTanya himself explains. You know, the Sefer HaTanya, its official name is Sefer Shel Beinonim, the book of the middle of the roaders. And the Baal HaTanya has a very unique definition. Now, the Rambam says a tzaddik is a person that has more mitzvos than averos, and a rasha is more averos than mitzvos, and a beinoni is equally balanced. That's the Rambam's definition. But that's a difficult definition because, what do you mean? That could change every second. If I wake up in the morning and I start off with, you know, 51 mitzvos and 49 averos, and then, you know, I'm rude to somebody on the way to shul, it changes every second. So the Baal HaTanya learns very differently. The Baal HaTanya learns a Beinoni, a middle of the rotor, can even be a perfect tzaddik, but it means he's still struggling with the Yetzer Hara. So he says that even if you're an absolute great tzaddik, you're still halachically a Beinoni because you're living in the world of struggle. And he says that tzaddik is a gift that Hashem gives you. It's nothing you can achieve in which you actually kill the Yetzer Hara. So that's kind of a gift that Hashem can give. And the Baal HaTanya says, sometimes you get it, sometimes you don't. In other words, it's not even a guaranteed gift. But that's when a person has reached the highest level of struggle that a person could possibly reach. But that's not a normal mahalach of avodah. Meaning, even when one is an absolutely perfect tzaddik, he's still living in the world of struggle. And that's why he's a Beinoni. That is why Rava says in the Gemara, I am a Beinoni. The Gemara says, the greatest Amoraim said that they were Beinonim. But this is the meaning. I think the Vilna Gaon is illustrating a very interesting Rashi. We say in Shema, V'yahavta eis Hashem alaykecha, you should love Hashem, b'chol levavacha means with all of your heart. But notice the two bases. It doesn't say libcha or libecha, b'chol levavacha. So Rashi says, b'shnei yitzarecha, you must love God with your two inclinations. Rashi says, the Yetzer Tov and the Yetzer Hara. And people ask, how do you love God with my Yetzer Hara? So some say, by conquering your Yetzer Hara, that's how some learn it. But like the Vilna Gaon, the explanation is very, very clear, that you use the Yetzer Hara to further your Avodas Hashem in various ways that you otherwise wouldn't do had you just had the Yetzer Tov. Right? So there actually is serving God with the Yetzer Hara, which is really, again, in this sense, the Yetzer Hara is the ego within man, that there is a need for a certain ego within mankind, otherwise we would not have the energy to press ahead and create and the like. Okay.
You know, there's a discussion with Robert and Abai in the Gemara where he says he's a Beinoni, but that means Rob still, as you said, has to struggle with his Yetzer Hara.
That's correct, yeah.
But then King David didn't have, if he eliminated his Yetzer Hara, how's he getting any reward for his mitzvahs?
Well, again, though, this was eliminated as a result of all of the struggle. So his reward would be that he perfected himself so that he reached that level. In other words, he wouldn't be getting reward for that level, but he's getting reward for reaching that level. Right?
From that point on, there's no reward for him?
Well, there wouldn't be reward for the mitzvos that he did, but there would be a reward for perfecting himself to reach that level. You know,
and that's what 100% of the potential means.
Yeah. But the Baal HaTanya says even that is not a guarantee. There's no guarantee that even if a person is Ovei Hashem at 100% of his potential, that he will ever truly destroy the Yetzer Hara. That's a gift. He calls that a gift. And some people will get it, and some people will not. In fact, that's what that's why the Baal HaTanya is called Sefer Shel Beinonim, because I'm going into the sheet of the Baal HaTanya, because he says that even the tzaddik gomor that we would call him is generally a Beinoni. The tzaddik, by his definition, is something that we have no control over. Legend has it, or Chabad has a Masorah, that the Baal HaTanya also wrote, Tanya is called Sefer Shel Beinonim, he also wrote Sefer Shel Tzaddikim, which answers your question. Once a person does become a tzaddik with no Yetzer Hara, what is his avoda? But that book got burned, so apparently we don't have that book. It's the Sefer of Tzaddikim. Yeah, okay.
The
idea that David killed the Yetzer Hara, I think means the following, that an analogy you might give is, let's take a rocket, right? A rocket needs to escape the gravitational force of the Earth. So you need a tremendous propulsion to get it out of the atmosphere, right? The atmosphere is like 60 miles up. Once it's beyond the atmosphere, meaning it's beyond the gravitational pull of the Earth, then, you know, it just moves. You don't really need any propelling force because it just moves through space. So there is a concept here that when I'm not totally united with God and I still have a sense of myself, I need my ego to propel me, to motivate me. You then reach a certain level where you're no longer tied down to the atmosphere and the gravitational field of the Earth. Then you can throw away the ego. So there is, the Vilna Gaon is talking about normal people. There may be a madrega where a person reaches such a high level that they can serve Hashem without any ego at all. They simply float. They're simply connected to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. That is the idea of killing the Yetzer Hara. But for most of us, we need to harness our Yetzer Hara to be able to serve Hashem. Right? So again, the Vilna Gaon is giving a hadracha that is appropriate to most people. There may be exceptions. Again, I think the example of the rocket is a good example, that at some point you just get beyond it, and then you just connect it to Hashem.
Wouldn't that be a higher level? Using the Yetzer Hara and propelling yourself to get closer to Hashem? Wouldn't that be, isn't that harder to do than completely getting rid of it?
Well, it may be harder, but it still represents a certain deficiency of the soul, in that you still have a sense of yourself. Meaning, there is a point at which a person becomes so nullified to God, they don't even have a sense that they're a separate being. They're simply an appendage, so to speak. They're simply like a hand that HaKadosh Baruch Hu is operating with. So, in a sense, living in the world of struggle is a higher avoda in some ways. But it does represent a spiritual impurity within the neshama, and eventually a person can get rid of that. And how did they get reward? They get reward because they worked on themselves to get rid of that. Okay. Now, the next three verses are also continuing about the Yetzer Hara, but again, it's hard to see the continuity. Mefitz v'chere v'chetz shanun ish ona b'reyeyu eid shaker. Okay, mefitz. Mefitz is a sledgehammer. Cherev is a sword. Chetz shanun is a sharpened arrowhead. Right, these are three ways you can kill a person. Sledgehammer, sword, and sharpened arrow, usually a poisoned arrow. This is, who is compared to this? Ish ona b'reyeyu eid shaker. When a man testifies against his friend as a false witness, and of course this is one of the Aseres HaDibros, right? Losana, in fact the very words, Losana b'reyecha eid shaker, do not testify against your friend, a friend is lavdavka, any person, eid shaker, a false witness. So here it compares the giving of false testimony to a sledgehammer, to a sword, and to an arrow. So here, the Vilna Gaon explains the following. The Vilna Gaon says, now he doesn't thought it, but we'll have to see if this is connected to anything. Sometimes it's hard to see the connection of the psukim. But the Vilna Gaon says that Eidus Sheker does three evil things. First, Sheker itself, all lies, are considered to be intrinsically evil, unless there's a reason of shalom or the like. Chaysamai shel HaKadosh Baruch Hu emes, the seal of God is truth. The Torah is a Torah of truth. One who engages in lying is desecrating the name of God, the essence of God, the Torah of God. Right? So lies are intrinsically a bad thing. Now it's true. That in the halachic system, there are heterim to deviate from the truth. Remember, even Hashem or the malachim deviated from the truth. When Sarah laughed and she thought, my husband is too old to have children. So the angel said, oh, why did Sarah laugh, saying she's too old to have children? She didn't say she's too old, although she was. She said he's too old. But what? The malachim deviated from the truth? For shalom between husband and wife. That's true. And of course, the whole story of Yaakov taking the brachos from Esav, right? There are a lot of problems, but as a general idea, Chaisamai Shelak Hadesh Baruch Hu Emes. So one avla of Eidah Sheker is simply that it is Sheker. The other avla is the damage you do to a person by false testimony. Whether it means he loses money, Shelok Adin, whether he has to pay money or he doesn't get the money he's entitled to because you're testifying for the other side, whether it means his reputation suffers, whether it means he's humiliated. So besides the intrinsic avla of sheker, there is also the pagam, that you're hurting a person. And the third is, especially if it's a friend, is the emotional betrayal of friendship. Because someone that I thought loved me, someone that I thought cared about me, right? These are like three forms of death. It is the perversity of the Torah, it is the damage that you cause a person, and it is the sense of betrayal that a person has. And the Gro wants to connect this to the idea that Chet Shanun, in other words, these are a sledgehammer, he says, is the worst way to die. That's kind of very painful because, you know, your bones get broken and you don't die right away. The sword is intermediate. The chetz is very, very quick. So he makes the point that the edus of sheker, sometimes all you've done is cause damage, which is bad. Sometimes you also cause betrayal. And in all cases, you cause perversity of the Torah. And that is the great avla of edus sheker. Now, why does this pasuk appear in connection with the Yetzer Hara is not entirely clear. But let's look at the next pasuk, and then I'll go back and try to see. The next two pasukim are connected to the Yetzer Hara, and let's look at those two, and then we'll go back to Yudches. Yudches, on its face, even with the Vilna Gaon's comment, seems a little out of place, and that is Shein Roa Veregel Muedes Miftach Boged Biyom Tzara. So Shein Ro'a has two meanings. To be Ro'eh is to graze, right? A shepherd is called a Ro'eh when sheep are grazing, right? They're Ro'eh in the field, etc. But Ro'eh can also come from the Shorish Liro'eya, which is connected to Ra, meaning a loose tooth, a tooth that is very loose and not capable of chewing. Regel mu'edes. Mu'edes here means a leg that falters. Like when you're walking and your heel turns or your foot turns, right? So that's called mu'adu karsulai. My ankles have turned. That is a common phrase in Tehillim when someone loses their balance and can no longer go on. So what it's saying is the following. A broken tooth and a faltering leg is he who trusts a treacherous person in his day of tzara, his day of suffering, his day of need. So again, simple pshat is the following. Again, without the grub, we're not talking about yetzara, we're simply saying the following. We depend on people very often. We sometimes depend on people to do things at a certain time, to be there in a certain place, to intervene when they need to intervene. But people are sometimes treacherous. A treacherous person is a boged. A boged is a person who doesn't carry out his commitments. So, you need to eat something, meaning you need to accumulate something. You need to go somewhere. But if you have made your arrangements with a person that's a boged, then it's as if you have broken teeth and broken legs. He who puts his trust in treacherous people in his day of need will find himself without teeth, the ability to eat, and without the ability to walk. Right? So the simple meaning here is choose your friends, choose the people that you turn to for help. And what is highlighting here is the idea of being dependable. This is a midah that a person needs to work on too. This is also one of the midos of life, is to be a dependable person. And I don't just mean in terms of nidorim and shvuos, but If you say you're going to be there at a certain time and place, you try to be there at a certain time and place. And generally speaking, Rav Yisrael Salanter used to say that one of the ways we merit a successful din on Rosh Hashanah is by making ourselves a person that other people need and depend on. Because sometimes, even if I don't have enough sechusim myself to merit a good life, but Hashem has to give me life because other people depend on me. But if you're a person that nobody can depend on, you don't have the merits of other people who need you, because nobody needs you. Because anyway, you're not dependable. I mean, everybody needs someone to some degree. But the more dependable you are, the more people need you. They tell a maaseh with Rav Aryeh Levin, the great, great tzaddik, who was Rebbe Yosser's father-in-law, but he was a great tzaddik in his own right, that a life insurance salesman was trying to get him to buy life insurance. And Rav Aryeh refused to buy life insurance. And the way life insurance salesmen are sometimes very high pressure. So the salesman kept on pressuring him. So finally, Rav Aryeh said, I'll tell you why I don't want life insurance. He says, every year Hashem decides whether Aryeh deserves to live or doesn't deserve to live. And Rav Aryeh Levin said, because of his humility, I don't really deserve life in this world. But Hashem gives me life in the merit of my Rebbetzin, because my Rebbetzin depends on me to give her a parnasa, etc. And therefore Hashem gives me life because she needs me. And every year, he says, there is this discussion. The Midas Adin says, get rid of him. And the Midas Arachim says, no, Rebbetzin Chana needs him. So Rav Aryeh says, let's say I buy life insurance. So what's going to happen? The next Rosh Hashanah, the Midas Adin will say, get rid of him. And the Midas Arachim says, Rebbetzin Chana needs him. No, the Midas Adin will say, no, she doesn't. He has life insurance. This is not halacha l'maaseh. Moshe says one should get life insurance. But this is the idea that our sechus comes. In fact, the Talmud Yerushalmi says, sometimes Hashem gives us life because an animal depends on us. It's interesting. The person could have a dog or a cat. Again, I'm not giving you halacha what you should have. Hashem says, this guy's a bum, but the cat deserves a master. You know, the cat deserves somebody that'll take care of the cat or the dog. And Hashem gives you life for that reason alone. So the simple meaning of this pasuk, I'll tell you the Gra in a moment, is that it's a real tragic thing when people are left wanting because people are undependable in the world. Miftach bogeid biyom tzara. But the Vilna Gaon says that the boged here is the Yetzer Hara. Because the Yetzer Hara tries to paint a picture of life that's saying, you know, if you forget about the Torah, cut corners here and there, you can have pleasure, you can have joy, you can have ease, you can have comfort. But then what's going to happen is you're not going to really enjoy all of those events, like you'll have broken teeth, right? And you won't be able to go to Club Med or all those places you want to go to. And in the day of Tzara, that's the day of death, when you have to give a din v'cheshbon, all of a sudden the Yetzirah is not going to be your friend anymore. The Yetzirah is going to be the bogate, the treacherous person who turns against you. So again, it's continuing. Again, Pasuk Yitzchas we'll have to go back to. We haven't yet shown where that fits in. But Pasuk Yotes is just describing that the Yetzer Hara comes in the guise of a friend that will give you all sorts of good things, but you won't be able to really, really, really enjoy them. It'll be like being given all the good food and your teeth are broken and all the good places to go and you're not able to walk. In other words, you're not really going to enjoy it, and the Yetzer Hara will become your enemy in the day of your Tzara, which is the day after 120 years, when we turn to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. He also points out, the Vilna Gaon points out, that Shein Roeh and Regel Muedes means the Yetzer Hara will take away your ability to serve Hashem properly. The Torah is learnt with our mouths, right? We say words of Torah. So the broken tooth, and the Torah is also described as eating. We're going to see, there are many, many metaphors. Torah is compared to water. Torah is compared to bread. Torah is compared to meat. Now, you can't really eat the bread and the meat that well if you don't have any teeth. It's hard. So what the only thing you'll get from the Yetzer Hara is broken teeth, meaning you've lost your ability to learn Torah. And regel muedes, regel, my legs, is running to mitzvahs, coming to davening, you know, doing running around, getting matzah. So the Yetzer Hara will not give you any real pleasure, but it'll leave you with no Torah and no mitzvahs. And then you have nothing at all. You have nothing at all. So that's how the Vilna Gaon learns. And it's called a boged, because what is a boged? A boged is a treacherous entity. A treacherous person is a person who promises you all sorts of things, and then it turns out that none of those promises happen. Double dealing, switching. The Yetzer Hara creates the illusion of success, of prosperity, of happiness, of joy, and none of those things happen. The truth of the matter is, at the end of a person's life, what does Rav Chaska Levinstein used to say, that even Rishayim, even people who live totally materialistic and hedonistic lives, when they eulogize them, they'll try to find something. In other words, like this. Somebody, all they cared about was money. So if all they care about is money, then at the funeral we should say, this person lived for money. Like, you may have heard of the, this is quite an interesting woman, Ayn Rand. She was very, very immensely popular in the 50s, 60s, 70s, 80s. She was popular for a very long time. She was a Jewish woman, actually, and she developed an ethic, if you want to call it ethic, that the most important value in life was to be utterly selfish. Selfishness, she said. And so she would say, I think she would have been the exception to Rav Chaskel's Ha'ara. She would have said, I don't know what they said at her funeral, but she would have said, yes, she only lived for money and selfishness, and that was a good thing. And yet, other than her, nobody talks that way. They'll make up something. Even if it's not true, they'll say, you know, they cared about children. Why is this so? Why are they making up something? Because in the inner recesses of their hearts, even the person who lives totally for taivas knows that that's not a meaningful life. That life is about caring for others, taking care of others, living for something beyond your own gratification. So if their Yetzer Haras didn't allow them to do that, but l'chalapas, we want to remember them in that way. So that's what a boged is. The Rasha realizes that this didn't give him all the things he was supposed to get. This inner satisfaction, this inner joy, this happiness. That's the boged. Boged means it's all a treachery, it's all a fake. You fooled me. You promised me it would be this. And it's not that. Right? That's the miftach boged. That's why the word boged is a very powerful idea. Because the idea of treachery is, I thought that wasn't the deal. I thought the deal was a different deal. So based on this, I'll tell you something interesting. The Altar of Slobodka had a Talmud, had more than one Talmud, but who went off the derech. And the Altar of Slobodka, he said to the Altar of Slobodka, he says, Rebbe, I cannot forgive you for one thing. What did he say? He says, I know I'm not going to get Olam Haba because of the way I live. But why did you have to take away my joy in Olam Hazeh? See, that's the, that's the one thing. One thing, if a person has been through a yeshiva, so you could call it a negative aspect or a positive aspect. The one thing you get about from yeshiva is that even if you totally reject it, you're never really going to enjoy a hedonistic life again, because you kind of know it's just not worth that much. So the person was complaining, he said, okay, I'm not getting Olam Haba, let me at least enjoy this world. You took that away from me too. But in many, many ways, at least that gives you a truthful perspective, because otherwise you can spend many, many, many years fooling yourself. And then at the very end you're going to ask, where did the years go? Where did my life go? What I could have done and I didn't do. And that's why this is a powerful word, that trusting in that force is trusting the treacherous entity, not a person, the treacherous entity that is going to betray you in your moment of tzara after 120 years. And you're going to say, where did my life go? Why did it happen this way? That's a tough question. And even if, Baruch Hashem, we're not in the category of extreme hedonists, but those are questions that each and every one of us on some level are going to have to face. I don't know if there's any source for this, but I've seen in modern Dvar Torahs, people sometimes describe an aspect of Gehenna is that every person has two videos, Kadosh Baruch Hu has two videos of your life. One is the life you led, and the other is the life that you could have been, which you could have been. And the Gehenna is the pain of looking at the difference in those two pictures. What you could have been, what we could have been, I mean, and what we actually were. And the greater the difference, the more acute is the pain of what it is that we could have become. They tell the story about the Nitziv. It's interesting to tell you, the Nitziv, the great Rosh Yeshiva of Elazhin. Legend has it, I'm not sure if it's true, I have some problems with the story, but the traditional Messiah is that the Nitziv as a young man was not very brilliant. He was not a natural genius. And when he was around 12 or so, his parents decided he was not cut out for yeshiva learning, and they were going to apprentice him to a shoemaker. And he overheard that his parents were planning this, and he came out and he cried and he sobbed and he begged for one more chance, etc. Yeah.
My Rebbe is a descendant of Nitziv.
Yeah.
And he gave it over that his parents set it up so that the boy would hear them discussing how if he doesn't shape up, they're going to.
Oh, they wanted
to. Spending his time breaking furniture will apprentice him to a carpenter. So he heard them discussing
Shaped
up.
Now, it's interesting that they say carpenter because the story's always said shoemaker. That's
I heard carpenter.
In fact, it could be. It doesn't make a difference. But the reason I say shoemaker is because there's a certain brisker joke I want to add to the story.
Okay.
So the Nitziv really shook him up tremendously. And from that day onward, he became an extremely, the Nitziv was an extreme masmid, learning hours. In fact, the Nitziv learned for 25 years straight, he learned 16 hours a day. This was every day, Shabbos, Yom Tov. The exception was Tisha B'Av and Yom Kippur. But 16 hours a day, for 25 years. He became Rosh Yeshiva at 40. So from 15 to 40, once he became Rosh Yeshiva, he couldn't keep that learning schedule as Rosh Yeshiva, but until he was Rosh Yeshiva. So the Nitziv said later, when the Nitziv finished his first major sefer, which is Hamik Sheila, it's on the Sheiltas of Rabbi Chai Gain. Again, very, very rare. Not too many people even write on that sefer, but that was his magnum opus. So he made a very, very big simcha, a very big kiddush. And he said the story, he says, what would have been 25 years ago had I been apprenticed to a shoemaker? He said, or a carpenter, everything. So I certainly, I would have been a Yirei Shemayim, I would have done mitzvos, I would have done Torah, and I would have gone to a shir every day, I would have gone to the Ein Yaakov shir. And I would have lived my life thinking I was doing the Ratzon Hashem. And then after 120 years, I go to the Beis Din Shel Mala. And I'm thinking I'm going to be judged pretty good. And they say, where is your sefer on the Sheiltos? Where is your sefer on Chumash? Where are your Shilas HaTshuvos? Where is the yeshiva you should have ran for 50 years? And I'm going to say, what? What? Me? I'm a shoemaker. I'm a carpenter. What do you want from me? He says, no. You should have been that. Now, how could it be his fault? That's a good question. I mean, but be it as it may, he says, now at least I know. I have done something that Hashem wanted me to do that otherwise could have been the other way. Now the brisker joke is, brisk is sometimes very sarcastic, that the brisk said there are going to be some, because brisk is against certain drachim that are not brisker drachim, they said there are going to be some Rosh Yeshivas where after it's 120 years, Hashem is going to ask him, where are the shoes you should have made? Okay. That's a stick of lights on us, but okay. But be it as it may, this just shows you that within each and every one of us. And how do you know? That's the real challenge. How do you know? I have no idea. But within each and every one of us, there are tremendous kochos that Hashem expects us to bring out. You know, at the Chazon Ish's Levaya, there was a boy, this was in 1955 in Bnei Brak. So there was a boy that was crying and sobbing and mourning the death of the Chazon Ish. So Rav Dessler, right, Michtam Eliyahu, Rav Dessler was the Mashgiach of Panovich at the time in Bnei Brak. Rav Dessler went over to the boy and he said, "Why are you crying over the Rav, the Gaon, and the Tzaddik who's buried there in the ground?" He pointed to the boy. "Why don't you cry over the Rav, the Gaon, and the Tzaddik that's buried in you?" Because the Chazon Ish became the Rav, the Gaon, and the Tzaddik. What about you? Rav Gifter used to have, although I saw this in Chai Yisrael, the same thing. He used to have on a wall pictures of Gedolim, and then he had a mirror in one of them, as if to say, you know, he could try to be at that wall too. I think that's a little bit of an example of using the Yetzer Hara, so to speak, to push ourselves and the like. But that's the idea of Bogate. Bogate is the tragedy of recognizing that what I thought was a good deal just turned out to be just a total fraud, a mistake. I got tricked. I got cheated. And that's the Miftach Bogate B'Yom Tzara. And this is like my teeth are broken, so I don't have Torah. My legs are faltering. I can't do mitzvahs. And I didn't even get all these great benefits that I was supposed to get. Now, similarly, Pasuk Chaf continues, and it uses the analogy, Ma'adeh Beged B'Yom Kara Chometz Al Noser Shar Bishirim Alevra. Now again, let's take it literally. Ma'adeh Beged B'Yom Kara is removing a coat on a cold day, right? Not so smart. Pouring vinegar on Nesser. Okay, so Nesser, here you have to know a little bit about the laundry habits in the ancient world. They used to use, paradoxically, maybe they still do, they paradoxically used to use some type of dirt to wash clothing, in the sense like clay really, you know, it's not really dirt, that they were able to remove stains with, right? And that's called Nesser, kind of an alum. And if you would put vinegar or something like that weakens the power of the alum. So just like removing a coat on a cold day prevents the coat from protecting you, just like pouring vinegar on the alum, on the clay particles, destroys their ability to remove stains. Okay, so there is the removal of the coat, stops the coat from protecting you. Pouring vinegar on the neser prevents the neser from cleaning the filth. So too, it mentions a third thing that is like those two, like A and B, is C. What is C? Shor b'shirim, he who sings pleasant, friendly songs, al lev ra, to a person who has a bad heart. Now, the simple meaning, before we get to a deeper interpretation, is that when a person is very depressed and very bitter, sometimes they're not ready to hear happy, joyous, optimistic messages. You're adding salt to their wounds. You're adding pain to their pain. You're stripping them of a garment that they need to protect themselves from the cold. You are adding something destructive to that which could cleanse themselves. This is an important idea, because when people are going through sadness, they need to grieve. Let's say, God forbid, there's a mourning. You don't simply come in right away and say, everything's going to be great, everything's going to be fine. Rather, our job is to be empathetic, to feel their pain. That is why the halacha is you actually sit in silence with the mourner till the mourner talks. So the simple meaning here basically is that, yeah, eventually you want to cheer a person up, you want to build a person up. But there's a time and a place. Don't strip them of what they need to go through. and don't try to dilute the cleansing process of their soul. Grieving is a process. And this is true for all types of grieving. It's true for bereavement, God forbid. It's true for things like divorce, things like infertility. That when we trivialize a suffering by trying to get people to get out of it too quickly, we are really destroying them. We are stripping away a natural process that human beings have to go through. Judaism does not deny the reality of pain. Judaism does not deny that people need to grieve. On one hand, yes, Gamzu L'tova. But you don't say to a person who lost their child right away, if they say Gamzu L'tova, they're tzaddikim. But you don't say Gamzu L'tova to them. You share in their pain, you share in their suffering. Right? So in Mishlei, you have to know, every pasuk is perfectly valid on Pashut Pshat, even before you get into deeper meanings. This Pashut Pshat is exactly a valid teaching. But again, the Vilna Gaon says the following. He gives an allegorical meaning. He says that midos tovos are called begadim. He brings various verses. They are called the garments of the soul. Just like a garment expresses my inner personality, right? The way a person might dress might express their personality in some way. So too, the midos express the various dimensions of my neshama. So begadim, and he brings various verses to show this, begadim are called midos tovos. And you can have a person sometimes who has very good midos, but in certain areas the temptations are so great that he loses his midos tovos. So for example, a person might normally be a person, in other words, there are buttons that set me off. I could be a person who normally doesn't lose my temper at all, but there are certain things that are so hard for me that I just get, and they can be very trivial sometimes, but they remind me of something, whatever it might be. So for example, let's say a person, this happens, if a person takes great pride in their clarity of communication, if they are misunderstood, they tend to get angry. Because that's like the most subtle, that's the most greatest attack on their metzias. Their metzias is that they're masber. You don't understand? How do you understand? Right? How can you not understand? Right? That might be a stupid thing, totally stupid. But that, you know, it goes to them. In fact, there's a whole chachma in this. You know, Rav Zelig Pliskin, you may have heard of Rav Zelig Pliskin, teaches Eish Torah, but he's a great counselor in the Baal Musar. So he wrote a book, it's in the English library, I think. If you could find anything in the English library, that's that would be shtickle nice. But in the English library, there's a book called Anger, the Hidden Teacher.
Inner Teacher.
Oh, the Inner Teacher, yeah. And that's a very beautiful title. It's a very good book, and it's a very beautiful title as well. Because the thesis of the book is that by analyzing and thinking through what makes me upset, why do I get upset at this and not at that? All right. If I'm a person who gets angry at everything, no, so I'm just an angry person. But often it's not that way. There are many things, you know, there are people, you know, if supper is late or there's no supper, you know, no problem at all. You know, they take, you know, everything, you know. But some little thing will get them very, very upset. So Rav Pliskin is developing the idea that if you can kind of analyze what makes me upset, you would understand yourself. And once you understand what makes you tick, you're then able to control and direct your personality because you now understand what's going on. Far too often, emotions just seize us and we really don't know what's going on. It's like a foreign demon. In fact, just go ahead. If you look at the last verse in the pasuk, just as he brings it out here, the last verse in Perek Chafei, which happens to be pasuk Chafei, pasuk Chafches rather, is Ir Perutza Ein Choma. A city full of holes without a wall is a man that has no self-control. Meaning, it's as if we're like an open city. All of the enemies can just enter. Like the emotions are like foreign forces that just invade the city that has no wall and no protective barriers. So anger is indeed a great, great teacher. So Ma'adeh Beged, the Vilna Gaon says, is it's describing the phenomenon of a person that has good begadim, good midas. But paradoxically, there are stress points in life that cause him to throw away the midah, precisely where he's most vulnerable and weak, as if he's exposing himself to the cold. Right? And the Vilna Gaon is warning a person, do not be overconfident. A person might think, I've mastered my anger, I've mastered my egotism. But then something will happen in which it'll all come back again. So you have to have constant vigilance and constant thoughts about all of that. Similarly, Chaimetz al Neser. Neser is used for tshuva. We find in the Pasuk in Yirmiyahu that we cleanse our souls b'neser. So it refers to cleaning ourselves, going through tshuva. But then we ruin it by pouring vinegar in it. We dilute our tshuva by backtracking. So again, this is all connected to the boget. The Yetzer Hara is very persistent. Even after we have good midos, and even after we've done tshuva, the Yetzer Hara tries to undermine the accomplishments that we've done. And the third thing he says, which is very interesting, is Shor B'Shirim is referring to the teaching of the Torah. The Torah is compared to a shira. A shira is a song. And Shor B'Shirim Alev Ra is he who teaches Torah to a student who is bad and deficient in midos. This is very interesting. The Vilna Gaon says that the Rebbe will destroy his midos and undermine his own tshuva by teaching students who have bad midos. Now, this is very, very fascinating. One might assume that, well, the Rebbe's job is to elevate students. But you have to understand that according to the halacha says this, that a Rebbe can be affected by his students just like the students can be affected by the Rebbe. Now, we're not talking about teaching Torah to people who are not religious, is it? I mean, obviously, there is Kirov and we work with Balei Tshuva and the like. But there is a great, great danger. It's a danger. Now, that doesn't mean you sometimes don't have to do dangerous things. Just because something is dangerous doesn't mean don't do it. But it means you have to think about the risks. There is great danger learning with cynical people, sarcastic people, people who are negative and disparaging, because those attitudes are contagious, and they are contagious not only to fellow students, chas v'shalom, they are contagious even to the Rebbe himself. And that's what the Vilna Gaon is saying. The Vilna Gaon is saying that when you sing the song of Torah to Talmidim that have a bad heart, that refers mainly to a negative heart, then you are stripping away the garments that protect you in your relationship to Hashem, including your good midos, because you may pick up bad midos. This is the Rebbe. And you are pouring vinegar on the neser that purifies your soul through the process of tshuva. Okay, so this is something to think about. We normally don't think about it this way. We normally think, oh, Rebbes, they're immune, right? They have the Rebbe gene or whatever that protects them. But no, a Rebbe can certainly be affected by the negativity of Talmidim. And of course, it's well known. Obviously, we're affected by our surroundings. Now, again, does that mean don't do it? No, it doesn't mean don't do it, but it means be aware of the dangers. You know, just like somebody goes to Africa, so you've got to take certain vaccinations not to get malaria. So when one is involved with a high-risk clientele, then one needs to get the chizuk, musr, or whatever it is, to be able to put themselves in high-risk, toxic environments. But the point is to be aware that the environment is toxic. In a more general way, this is a problem I know many of you will be in, perhaps, in Jewish outreach. Who knows what will happen in a few years. And Jewish outreach sometimes puts a person in compromising situations. Baruch Hashem, you're when you're in Yerushalayim and people come here, that's one thing. But when you go to college campuses, you go to towns, right, you go to environments where people are not only not religious but anti-religious in some ways, and you're there l'shem shamayim, to spread Torah, to teach mitzvos, and that's a wonderful, wonderful thing. But be aware that there are dangers, and then you have to ask yourself the question, how do I prevent? You know, the Baal Shem Tov used to give a mashal. When you have a broom that's sweeping up dirt, what happens is the broom gets quite filthy. Right? So you have to know, how do I clean the broom? How do I keep the broom in good order? Yeah.
So by paraduma, you clean another person, you yourself get
it. Yeah, that's right. That's kind of a mashal. My Rosh Yeshiva, Ritterman, used to say it in a humorous vein about a youth organization called NCSY. I don't know if those of you are familiar. NCSY is a very wonderful youth organization. It's in the United States. And it's for high school kids who are non-religious. Although the advisors and the teachers are religious kids, but the clientele is largely non-religious high school kids. And it's a co-educational organization, boys and girls together, etc. And obviously, tznius is not totally good. And Kolisha is not totally good. You know, there's a lot of issues. So one of the big issues is, should yeshivos, mainstream yeshivos, allow their boys to be NCSY advisors? It's always an issue. Right? Let's say you're a 12th grader or you're a first year base medrash person, and you want to be an advisor in NCSY co-ed Shabbaton. So look at the arguments here. On one hand, to take a very religious person and put them there, they could be a wonderful source of inspiration. Right? Who are you going to have? If you're not going to have the more religious people, you'll have less religious people. So for carrots, there'll be less of a kirif. On the other hand, you're taking someone from a sheltered yeshiva environment and you're putting them in a co-ed environment. Right? What do you do? So the Rosh Yeshiva used to say, there's no clear answer on this, but the Rosh Yeshiva used to say that NCSY is like Parah Aduma. He says, it purifies the impure, meaning all of the non-religious kids gain tremendously from it, but it can adversely affect the religious kids. So what do you do? So it depends on the kid. But all I'm saying is, one needs to come in there with their eyes wide open. Well, wide open, maybe that's a bad analogy. But, you know, spiritually wide open, not physically. Physically, keep your eyes closed. But the concept would be aware of the dangers. What is it saying? Forewarned is forearmed. That's the idea that you need the hachana. Daven beforehand that you shouldn't be nichshal in things, then your kavanas are l'shem shemayim, and you know, that would be it. So that's how the Vilna Gaon understands shor b'shirim alev ra, as opposed to the pshat, don't try to cheer up people who are grieving, which is the simple pshat. The Vilna Gaon says, don't sing the song of Torah to those who are cynical and negative and would be a bad influence on you, unless you take the proper precautions. Okay. Now we have two more psukim, and this is a very, very famous set of psukim. The Gemara in Sukkah darshens it. Im ra'ev sonacha, if your enemy is hungry, hachileo lechem, give him a piece of bread to eat. Im samei, if your enemy is thirsty, Hashkeu mayim, give him water. Ki gechalim atachot el rosho, because that is pouring hot coals on his head. For Hashem yishalim lach, and God will reward you as well. Now, simple meaning is that if you have an enemy, someone you hate, someone that did bad things to you, and the enemy is now starving, so your attitude might be, let him starve. Who cares about him? You know, he did all these bad things to me. Shlomo HaMelech says, no, give him food. And if he's thirsty, give him to drink. And it seems to be saying, because that's the best revenge. If you really want him to feel bad, take care of him. Because then he's going to be humiliated. He's going to be... Now again, this is the simple meaning, but this would be a little difficult, because this seems to be encouraging a gloating and a superiority. But in the simple Hemshech, that's exactly what it's saying. I'll tell you how the Gemara interprets it. He says, give him food, give him drink, because that is, you're really dumping it on him by showing that you're so much better than him. And not only that, Hashem is going to give you reward for the chesed too. So what a wonderful deal. He says, I get my psychic satisfaction and Hashem is going to reward me. Now here, unlike I think the earlier, yeah.
Hashem says don't take revenge.
No, that's correct. So technically this would not be revenge. Technically this would be bearing a grudge, if you know the difference. The difference is, revenge, the Gemara says, if I had asked you for a favor and you said no, and then you ask me for a favor and I say no, that's revenge. Bearing a grudge is, I do the favor to you and I say, I'm not as bad as you. That's bearing a grudge, which is it's us, right? So, l'chaira, this attitude seems to be mamish, what bearing a grudge is, meaning to say, yeah, I'm going to take care of you because I'm a much better person than you are. Be ashamed. Now, that's what it seems to be saying, and yet, and although humanly, perhaps we can understand it, but one would not expect Shlomo HaMelech to call that a positive way to behave. If he would have said, forgive, you know, don't be cruel, be kind to people even if they were mean to you, that's Beseder. But that second pasuk is problematic. Gachalim atachot el rosho is, you're dumping on him by doing it. That seems to be, you know, getting joy in the fact that he's so humiliated that you're taking care of him now. So based on this, the Vilna Gaon learns a tremendously interesting pshat. And once again, he learns, your enemy is the Yetzer Hara. And he says the following. He says that Torah is compared to both fire and water. And he differentiates the following. He says, throughout the book of Mishlei, the Vilna Gaon said, there are two primary Yetzer Haras within the human being. One Yetzer Hara is called the Koach HaTavani. Tavani is the Koach for Taiva. Taiva is lust. But lust is understood as decadence, comfort, and hedonism. In fact, the Vilna Gaon describes lust as very passive. You just want comfort, you want ease, you want to stay in bed, you want to watch television. That's the Taiva. Taiva is very, very passive, hedonistic, seeking gratification. The second Yetzer Hara is called Kasani, which is anger, and that involves power, aggression, and control over people. So this is a little different than you would think. So the Vilna Gaon says, when a person actively seeks money, that's not coming from the Taiva, that's coming from Kas. It's an aspect of power and domination and control. So he says like this. He says, Mayim is a refuah for Taiva, or Mayim is similar to Taiva, because Mayim is comfort, it refreshes, it relaxes. Eish is connected to anger and aggression. So he says, Torah is called water because Limud HaTorah can correct my taiva, it can refine me and make me less prone to taiva, because water conquers water. And Torah is called fire because it can help me deal with my anger by directing it to the Eish HaTorah. Right? So the Mayim of Torah is Mechuvin Keneged the Koach HaTavani. Because what do Chazal say? Barasi Yetzer Hara, Barasi Torah Tavlin. I created a Yetzer Hara, and the Torah is a medicine for the Yetzer Hara. But to be more specifically, the part of Torah that's Mayim, I'll get to that, is Keneged, is the Tavlin of against Taiva. And the part of Torah that is Eish is the Tavlin against Kas. Now, which parts of Torah are that and that? So the Gra wants to say, and this is very interesting, and again, it's not so clear that it's intuitively obvious, but this is what he says. He says, Agadita is the Mayim of Torah that helps us deal with Taiva, and Halacha is the Eish of Torah that helps us deal with Kas. Now, why is that so? He doesn't say entirely, but it seems to be like this. It seems to be that Agarata deals with Midos, it deals with Musar, it deals with the ultimate purpose of life. And that eventually weeds me away from hedonism and decadence and seeking comfort. Because the more I understand the nature of life, the more I know that life has to go beyond that. So the mayim of Agadita is mesaken the Yetzer Hara of Taiva. Now, kas stems from egotism, aggression, power. So he says, in halachic discussion, we tend to invoke those midos of argumentation. Right? What is a halachic discussion? You argue, you debate, you yell. So what are you doing? You're taking that aggressive impulse that could be used to abuse people or to accumulate power, and you're directing it through the Eish of Torah in what is called Rischa D'Oraisa, the fiery part of Torah. Right? So therefore he wants to say that Agadata wears away the koach of Taiva, and Halacha is like a fire that takes away the koach of Kas. Now he makes another point. He says that fire tends to destroy things right away. Water, when water goes against rock, it takes a very long time till the water wears away the rock. So he says, Taiva is called a rock because when I'm so involved in the decadence of Taiva, my soul is like a rock. I'm insensitive to Ruchnius. I don't respond to Ruchnius. So the work of Agadita takes a very long time. But the work of Halacha to be Misak and Kas, that could be relatively quick because that gives you an immediate outlet for your anger and your aggression and everything else. Now, based on this bit of a complicated analogy, he goes further and says that halacha is called fire, but we also find halacha is called bread because it is basic sustenance. Bread. Lechu, lachmu, belachmi, eat my bread is a reference to Torah. So, now we have the pasuk is the following. You have an enemy. This enemy is your Yetzer Hara. Your Yetzer Hara tells you, don't learn, don't learn, don't learn, do other things, spend your time, become famous. You know, get a career. So, what it says is, if your Yetzer Hara is shouting and trying to take you away from Torah, give your Yetzer Hara bread. Feed him Torah. Now, what's the idea of feeding him Torah? Because Chazal say that a person should learn Torah and mitzvos even shelo lishma. Because by learning not lishma, you come to learn lishma. So, the Yetzer Hara will not let you learn lishma, but you can learn shelo lishma. Think, you know, tell Yetzer, I'm going to learn to become a great rabbi. I'm going to learn to become a great scholar. I'm going to learn to become a Rosh Hashiva. I'm going to learn to win a test. I'm going to learn to go to Lava Malka tonight. All of that is shelo lishma. See, this is what's the lesson of the Gemara. The Gemara in Sukkah says, "Impaga b'cha menuvol zeh." If the disgusting Yetzer Hara tries to keep you away, mashchehu lebeis hamedrash, pull him to the beis hamedrash. Now it doesn't say you go and leave him behind. It says pull him into the beis hamedrash. What does it mean, pull him? Again, going back to the point, utilize the Yetzer Hara as part of your motivation. This is what Chazal said. Learn shelo lishma. Shemitoch shelo lishma bal lishma. And therefore, if your enemy is trying to keep you out of the Beis Medrash, give him the bread. Give him the bread. Not you eat the bread. Give him the bread. And give him the water. Again, the idea is the bread is connected to halacha, and the water is connected the agadita. And you are actually defeating him. You think, oh, I'm giving in to the Yetzer Hara because I'm learning because of egotism and kavod and osher. No. Ultimately, you're defeating the Yetzer Hara, because learning Shelo Lishma will bring you to Lishma, and your enemy will ultimately be defeated. He'll let you do it because you're doing it Shelo Lishma, but ultimately he will be defeated that very way. So the Gechalim Hashachotei El Rosha means you are burying your enemy by tricking your enemy into thinking what you're doing is a Shelo Lishma type of endeavor. Okay, that is how the Gra learns it. And again, the Lechem and the Mayim, again, Lechem is Halacha, which is basic nutrition. Mayim is Agada, and the Gra's Mahalach was, Lechem is also called, or the Halacha is also called Eish, because it deals with the Koach of Kas, Kasani, and the Mayim is the Agadata, which takes away the stone-like insensitivity of a heart because of my connection to taiva and decadence and hedonism. And the water softens up the rock and dissolves the rock, and eventually I no longer live this self-absorbed life of taiva. Yeah.
So the earlier analogy of eating in the buffet with your teeth broken, I don't understand, how did that work again?
Say, I didn't hear you.
One where this world is like being in a all-you-can-eat buffet, but your teeth are broken with the Yetzer Hara. I didn't get how that works exactly.
I'm sorry, I still don't understand. You say, the Vilna Gaon is simply saying this. Here he's saying that the Yetzer Hara will try to if you say, I want to learn L'Shem Hashem, the Yetzer Hara is going to try to take you away from that. It'll say, who are you? You're nothing, you can't do this.
So, I mean, on the one before where you said it's like being at a buffet.
Oh, Shenra, yeah.
Sorry, I didn't get the application exactly.
I was just saying that the Yetzer Hara creates images in your mind that if you throw away the world of Torah, you will have joy and happiness and fulfillment and prosperity and contentment. But then you will discover that this was a false deal. It does not bring you any of those things. And therefore, you've lost your Torah, you've lost your mitzvahs, and you look back at your life and you see it as a fraud. You were tricked. That's what he's saying.
So in other words, only apply to people who know about Torah.
Well, yeah. I mean, obviously, we're talking about people who were led astray by the Yetzer Hara. If somebody had not learned, that's a different issue. That's not an issue of a Yetzer Hara. The Yetzer Hara is the phenomenon of people who rejected the Torah after they learned about it. Right, and it is saying, but I want to point out that, you know, Torah, I mean, there is something called natural morality within a human being. I mean, let's say a person didn't know about the Torah, but most people understand instinctively they should not be cruel, they should not be selfish, and yet they live cruel and selfish lives. So I think the same thing is going to be true for them. At the end of their lives, they are going to realize, if not earlier, that all that they thought they would gain by living that type of life was simply not true. And you can apply it. You know, good. Someone never heard about tefillin, so you know they're not going to go through that process. But there are going to be many, many areas that even if a person doesn't know about Torah, they're still going to realize they were not living a life that is worthy of Hashem.
But somebody who just follows the Yetzer Hara, they must know that at the end of it, they're going to have to be...
Yeah, they do know that. And the question we can ask in all of us is, how can anybody ever do an Aveira? It really makes no sense. It makes no sense at all. Because you know for sure that whatever pleasure I am getting is going to be way, way outweighed by HaKadosh Baruch Hu's accountability. Yeah, you're right. How the Gemara says in Sota, nobody ever does an Aveira unless they become temporarily insane. So Gemara in Sota, no one sins unless somehow there was a Ruach Shus. No Aveira makes sense, no matter how small. It makes no sense. On a rational calculation, if you believe in God, you have to believe that the loss of a sin is greater than the gain of a sin, and the gain of a mitzvah is greater than the loss of a mitzvah, whatever inconvenience a mitzvah causes. So how could it be? It's a very good question. I don't know. I mean, it's a question that, you know, I ask myself too. How can it be? It's a ruach shtus. We just don't think about the future. We get blinded. We just don't think.
So So would you say the Yetzer Hara feeds you a lie, or just covers, makes you forget about what?
Well, it's a whole bunch of process. It feeds you a lie, it gives you a false, you know, the imagination takes over. The imagination doesn't focus on reality. Walter Mitty, in his famous story, you know, you have daydreams about all sorts of things that are just not true. But we daydream and we imagine them to be true. You know, I remember I was once, you have to know the United States roads for this, but when I lived in Silver Spring and I had to drive to Baltimore, so you have to go north on the highway, 95 north. But if you're not watching the road, it turns off and it becomes 95 south going the other way. So I remember I was driving and apparently I wasn't paying attention, and all of a sudden I see the Washington Monument and the Lincoln Memorial, which is 95 south. It's not on the way to Baltimore. So I knew I was on the wrong road, but I can't even explain this, but I think this is our psychology. But I didn't want to admit that I was on the wrong road. So I started telling myself, you know, maybe you do see the, you know, just because I never noticed it before. But maybe it's really there, I just never looked, now I saw it. Now what was I doing? I knew it was wrong at the very time. But it would have been too hard to readjust. It was harder this way. So you look for something that justifies what you're doing, even if it makes no sense at all. Well, I think that's an instructive experience, because the truth of the matter is, that's what we do all the time. It makes no sense, but we, you know, it's hard to change. So let's keep on going. Maybe I'll get to the right place. Now, it's true. If I would have kept on going, it ends in Florida. So, you know, and then you just have to turn around. So, you know, I could have kept on going. I would have been able to get to the right road eventually, but I would have been late for class, certainly. But this is the thing. This is human psychology, and this is a mystery why we're this way. It's not rational. And that is, we just don't want to change. We think it's too hard. Not knowing it's much harder the other way. What did the Briskarev say? It's kind of also a little bit of a sharp remark. There was a person that had a very bad toothache. So he was saying, a person shouldn't talk this way, but he was saying he wants to be dead. So the Briskarev said to somebody, he says, he thinks it'll be better then. He says, you know. Okay. All right, have a good day. Okay, we'll stop a little here. And I'm sorry, one more.
Just according to the simple pshat of the pasuk,
yeah.
how do we see that the suggestion is what seems that of bearing a grudge in order that it should
Yeah.
The second part of this puzzle.
It is the feep shoot, though. It is very difficult. The only thing I can think of is this: that when it says you're pouring coals on his head, it's not so much you're dumping on him, but you're destroying his negative thoughts. He had negative thoughts. Rosho might refer to his thoughts, meaning if you want to change an enemy into a friend, you do so by destroying the negative thoughts he has on you, and those negative thoughts come by kindness. So you could learn Rosho is not referring to the person, but to the thoughts in his head, and therefore you will overcome that negative. In fact, they have some interesting stories about, I read this about a big neo-Nazi guy in, this was a long time ago, in Nebraska. I think that was for some reason, the headquarters of the American Nazi Party. And as he was getting older, he got disabled, and a Jewish family decided that they would take care of him. They would do chesed. And at first, he just couldn't, he couldn't stand it. It was killing him, because Jews are, you know. But eventually, you know, he grew to love them, and he did shuva for the. He said, everything was wrong. I see now that everything was wrong. So it's mamish what this pasuk says, that they changed him totally. Now, it's interesting that this, I don't know why that doesn't work here. Here you have Palestinian terrorists who get wonderful medical care in Israeli hospitals. Israelis save their lives. And then they go back and they bomb again. So apparently, this doesn't work for everybody. But it works for human beings. Okay. All right. Okay. All right.